This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, it's sometimes nice to be able to shine a spotlight on other parts of the world. And for those of you who've been following events in the Central American region, you'll know that things have certainly escalated between the US and Venezuela, with Venezuela being accused of shipping all kinds of illegal things to the United States, and President Trump showing very, very little patience for what's going on in Venezuela and, of course, for the Venezuelan regime. So for Israelis, it's quite nice to say, oh, they've got a problem over there, and it's nice that the problem is over there and not near us. However, interestingly, the Venezuelan problem is not all that far away from Israel. And the reason that I say that is because Venezuela has a very, very interesting relationship with Turkey, which is always worth keeping in consideration. And in particular, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has a very close relationship with Turkish President Erdogan, something that goes back a number of years. And if I believe everything that I read in the press, and of course I don't, but on this occasion it's quite convincing, that apparently Turkey has been used by Venezuela as a kind of money laundering location to allow Venezuela to escape the sanctions that have been placed on it, and to ship goods and potentially even ship money out of Venezuela via Turkey to other parts of the world, thereby keeping the Venezuelan economy alive and kicking. And that Turkey has been cited as a possible location for Nicolas Maduro to escape to in the event that something happens, when if his regime is pulled down or if it collapses, that he's got apparently an escape route to Turkey. Now, the thing about Turkey that's also very complicating is the fact that Turkey is a member of NATO, and therefore members of NATO have to maintain a certain sort of minimum kind of relationship with Turkey in order to accommodate its membership of NATO. So it all becomes very, very complicated when you also consider Turkey's relationship with Israel and the extent to which Turkey has been, and particularly Erdogan, has been very anti-Israeli and very anti-Semitic, and sort of that drags everybody into the whole consideration. So even things that are happening very far from our borders and which are seemingly nothing to do with us have an interesting kind of link back somehow. And that is the situation with Venezuela.
Unbelievable. It is really, we live in such mad, but maybe we always say that we live in mad times. I think maybe we've been saying this for as long as we've been able to speak. Anyway, let's talk about a TV address scheduled by the Prime Minister on the issue of the Haredi draft. That was cancelled at the last minute. What is going on here?
Yeah, to be precise, apparently 7 minutes before it was due to have gone ahead on TV yesterday, it was suddenly cancelled. The reason that was given by the Prime Minister's office was scheduling constraints. The Prime Minister couldn't get there.
Oh, please.
However, it is a relatively commonly known secret that has been circulated quite widely that the address that the Prime Minister was going to give on TV had actually been pre-recorded. And so the scheduling constraints constraints really don't stack up at all. However, when one has a look at this Haredi draft law, then one can potentially understand why the Prime Minister didn't want to stand up on live TV, even if it had been pre-recorded, in order to make a statement about this. Just to update listeners, the High Court of Justice has ruled that the current exemption that has been given to ultra-Orthodox yeshiva students, and indeed others, quite loosely kind of defined, from going to the army is illegal. It's unconstitutional in a country that doesn't have a constitution, but it's illegal and it doesn't stack up and it can't be protected by the High Court of Justice. And instead of the High Court making a ruling saying, therefore, every ultra-Orthodox person is required, according to the law, to turn up to an army recruitment center right away, what the High Court said is, we demand that the government take care of this, pass some sort of a law that is legal, that can stand up to scrutiny, and that will address this issue. And the government has dragged its feet for an extended period of time about this issue. What are the government's considerations? Clearly, Netanyahu's coalition is dependent upon the support of the ultra-Orthodox parties in the Knesset. Without their support, there is no coalition, and Netanyahu would not be the prime minister. Now, those ultra-Orthodox parties demand of the prime minister that he finds a legitimate way to exempt ultra-Orthodox youth from going to the army. We discussed a little bit of that yesterday as to why they think that they may think that they don't want the youth to attend the army. But the reason that they offer is that learning in a yeshiva, in an institution of Jewish learning, contributes towards the safety of Israel. That is the public statement that is made, and therefore it is legitimate that those youth don't go to the army because their learning of Jewish law and of Torah and everything else contributes towards the protection and the safety of the state of Israel. You will decide whether you think that's a legitimate statement or not, but that is the official line that has been taken. The High Court doesn't agree. The High Court thinks that they should go to the army like everybody else, or at least make some contribution to Israel instead of simply sitting in an institution of Jewish learning. And by the way, around the edges, there are many, many gray areas about those who are signed up to study in these yeshivot and don't turn up, or they are just signed up just to be on the register and to receive a stipend, but they have no intention of turning up. All kinds of things around the edges. Many of them are working illegally, taxiing at night and not paying taxes and all kinds of other things. There is a whole industry around this which causes a great rift in our society between those who do legitimately go to the army and pay their taxes and those who are seen not to be doing that. So this law, which as under the stewardship of the Defense Committee Chairman Boaz Bismuth, has gone through various machinations and has come out of the end of its process and is being presented. The law in itself is very toothless. It doesn't have any of the sanctions that were previously discussed. What happens if people don't adhere to the law? Well, I mean, obviously a law is a law, but there are no sanctions, there are no punishments set out for those people who don't adhere to the law. One of the other complaints about the law is that you can potentially get legitimate deferral of your service until the age of 26, by which time you are permanently deferred. Once you reach the age of 26, you have no obligation to attend the army. And so therefore, there is a legitimate path to getting legal deferrals until you reach the magical age of 26, and then you don't have to go to the army anyway. There is another complaint about the law which says that it immediately gives the opportunity for all of those who up until now have broken the law by not attending the army. It immediately gives them some sort of an exemption from any future prosecution, and it allows that all to be kind of legalized in one fell swoop. So these are the main complaints about the law. And if this law was to be passed in order to satisfy the High Court of Justice ruling, I think it could potentially lead to some sort of a civil war in Israel. I mean, I'm not suggesting that there will be a civil war as such, but a major, major uprising of those people who legitimately serve in the army and have done so over the last 2 years, giving up everything that they possibly have. That they see a vast swathe of Israeli society not being required to make their contribution. And it's interesting that former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett came out with a video statement yesterday, which was broadcast on TV, where he spoke about the fact that the IDF is currently facing a manpower shortage of 20,000 soldiers. And he says there are only two options: to draft our Haredi brothers so that they shoulder their share, or alternatively, to impose on our reservists another 120 reserve days every year on a permanent basis, and so doing, destroying their professional and family future. Those were the words of Naftali Bennett. He claims that right now there are about 100,000 young Haredi men who are obligated to enlist and who can be trained, he claims, within 5 months to the level required for their missions. And it is possible for the IDF to be able to accommodate them and to train them up and to do whatever is needed in order to make them useful for service. However, that is not currently being addressed. And so from every possible angle, the pressure is building on this issue of the Haredi draft law. On the one hand, the ultra-Orthodox community very much against it, the Prime Minister supporting that view in order to keep them in his coalition, and many, many other people in Israel, including modern Orthodox who do serve in the army, are saying, this is not okay. This is simply not okay, and this issue has to be addressed. And our army right now, it was one matter when we didn't feel that there was a manpower shortage in our army. Now there is a dire manpower shortage in our army, and it's somehow there is a solution out there which can be exercised, but it's just simply not being exercised for the reasons that I've given already. So again, I'll allow you all to draw your conclusions, but this is a major issue in our society. Make no mistake about that.
It's definitely heading towards, well, from this conversation and from everything I read, it is definitely heading, as you said, towards some form of crisis. Is there a recognition in Israel, in Israeli political circles, how significant a concern or how important it is to solve this one way or another?
Well, I think it depends who you ask. Does the Prime Minister, for example, recognize the importance of this? I'm not sure. I think that the Prime Minister simply sees his survival as Prime Minister as being his most his primary concern. I don't think that he is currently taking a more holistic view and saying, for the safety and the security and for the better good of the state of Israel, we need somehow to get these ultra-Orthodox youth into the army. I think it would benefit them. I think it would benefit us. I think it would create more parity within our society. This idea of giving an amnesty to people who have already broken the law is not okay. I don't think he views it in that holistic view. I think he just sees it as a ticket for him to win the next election, and how he's going to be able to do that. And by his accounts, he needs the support of the ultra-Orthodox community to achieve that.
Right. Okay, let's just talk as well about the remains. I was a bit confused by this. The remains brought back from Gaza, they're not using the word body, and I've noticed a bit of so I don't really understand what's happening. What do we know about the remains that have been sent back from Gaza?
Yes, so you're right. I noticed that yesterday too, Howard, that there was no reference to the word body anywhere in the rhetoric in the press statements that were being used. What we do know is that there remain two bodies of deceased hostages held in Gaza. They are Master Sergeant Ran Gvili and Thai National Suthisak Rinthalak. They are both important to us, important as each other. The fact that one happens to be an IDF soldier and the other one happens to be a non-Israeli foreign worker is of no consequence in this discussion. For us, they both need to be returned in order for the ceasefire agreement to be upheld and for the terms to have been fulfilled. Yesterday, we know that over the past few days, the Gazans and the Hamas in particular have tried to show videos and pictures which depict them apparently trying to excavate remains of Israeli hostages. That's the way that it's been presented. It's been going on for days and days and days already, where we receive pictures and updates about attempts to excavate with no results. Yesterday, the Red Cross made the following statement. They said that they received a small remains, pieces of a body, is the way that they described this from the Red Cross. Interestingly, Hamas said absolutely nothing about handing anything over. They made no statement at all. Israel has confirmed that they received something, some samples, some remains of some sort, which forensic experts are checking. It's clearly not a body. It's clearly not a whole person. It seems to be potentially just a few bits and pieces which may belong to one of the two hostages. We don't really know at the moment because we haven't had results of those forensic tests. But I'm guessing that if those forensic tests may turn out to be positive, I don't know if there's an opportunity to continue to dig in that area to find the remainder of those remains, or whether something else happened that things were scattered around. I've no idea. But this is obviously a very, very heartbreaking for the families, very concerning indeed. But again, you know, we as a nation feel obligated to bring those two back for their rightful burial in their home countries, and to continue this path until that's achieved.
That is where we leave it. We'll, of course, keep a close eye on that story and see what information we will receive during the course of today. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.